All right, so the goal of this podcast, as I resurrect it yet again, is to try to have a little bit of variance so it doesn't become too static and, you know, then when you log on, you never know what you're going to get. Do people still call it log on when you... I don't even know. Anyways, today we're going to do 10 questions. 10 random questions. I would love to hear any of your answers at Rob Fay on Twitter, which is at R-O-B, F as in Frank, A-I. Each of these, kind of like pardon the interruption, I promise you, the response to said question will not take more than 3 minutes, but I'm going to rattle through this within a half an hour, maybe your commute home. I hope that you'll engage. Let's get to today's edition of Sports Bar Radio.
This is a throwdown, a showdown. Hell no, Rob Fay Nation can't slow down. It's going to go.
First offense.
All the mix.
Go on and break.
Okay, party people in the house. You're about to witness something you've never witnessed before.
Yeah.
All right, so 10 questions, unscripted, unedited. We just basically throw it at you here. And when you hear this sound, you will know it is time for me to move on. Okay, question number one. Which North American sports fan base is the worst? I know what you're thinking right now. A lot of people are probably going to say Toronto. A lot of people are going to say the Maple Leafs. But I think there's a bit of a media bias in there as well. Let's not forget something here. The Toronto media covers the team that is in their city, and then they branch out. The problem is when you do national formats, there's always going to be somebody that feels left out. The fact is in Vancouver, we're 3 hours behind, so they're always going to start with their stuff, and then they're going to try to get the West Coast stuff in. You don't want to hear it if you're on, you know, the Vancouver side of things or Calgary or Edmonton, but that's just kind of where the sun sets. So I get it. I've never been upset with TSN being East Coast centric because they got to wait for the stuff to come in from the West Coast. Okay, if you were to ask me overall which fan base is just the most relentless, the quote-unquote worst, I'm probably going to go with New York.
New York, stand up! Y'all sit the hell down! Get your damn act together!
Honorable mention to Texans, because, you know, everything's bigger in Dallas. What is it? Everything's bigger in Dallas? Whatever. New Yorkers are just ruthless. If you ever get the chance to go on satellite radio, find your way to a New York sports radio station.
I live in a supposedly quote-unquote baseball town, and you people out there don't know the sport. You have no clue.
They crush their athletes. They crush the coaches. They crush the ownership. They get on everybody. And you think people in Vancouver or Toronto or Montreal are bad. New York is just, they don't suffer fools. They don't give you a lot of time to get your act together. And at the end of the day, there's just an extra sound to them, an extra gear. When they boo, they really boo. And when they put you down, they put you really down. The reason I mentioned Texas is Texas just has this arrogance about them, don't they? I still don't know what it is. Is it everything's bigger in Big D? I think that's what it is. Nonetheless, you go to Dallas, you go to Houston. I would say in particular, those two major markets are just the walk with a strut, the cowboy way. You know, you go to Arizona and nobody brags about their teams. Nobody brags about the Cardinals. Nobody brags. Well, we know they're not bragging about the Coyotes. You come up the coast. You're either a Giants fan. You're a Dodgers fan. I know there's a few Padres fans around. Seattle's got great fans, but I actually feel like Seattle's fans are relatively polite. So if you were to ask me which is the worst fan base, I'm going to say any team from New York's got it really bad. Chicago, good fan base. But yeah, I guess we'll go New York, then Dallas, and then people on the West Coast that are bitter that the TSNs and the CBCs and the Sportsnets of the world go after the Toronto Maple Leafs before they go after the West Coast teams. Come on, we all know how it actually goes. All right, question number two. When is the last time that you stole something? I remember the first time that I stole something. I think it was like grade 8. We had a little corner market by our house. And I ended up taking a couple of, I don't know if they were Donruss or Bowman baseball cards, but I want to say that they were 25 cents a pack, 50 cents a pack at most. And slipped a couple in my pocket. And get a load of this. I went back a second time and got caught. And so the shop owner takes me to the back, says that he's going to call the police, says that he's going to call my parents, and I am bawling my eyes out. I'm like, you can't send me home. I'm going to get absolutely crushed. And you know what? Lesson is, he eventually let me go. I mean, I had to give him back the cards, and I never went back to that corner store. I never went back. And I don't know if that was his goal or if he was just trying to teach me an individual lesson, but that was the first time. I will admit, I have done it again. But is this even stealing? When you get to your car, you're in your car, and you start driving, and then you realize that you have gotten something in your car that you haven't paid for. For example, you go to Walmart, you realize, oh, shoot, I didn't pay for these vitamin C pills. That makes me sound like a senior, because that has happened to me. And I guess the right thing to do at that point would be to go back to Walmart, go into the store, go to customer service or to the till and pay for it, get the receipt and go out. That would be the good thing to do. But I will be fully honest, I did not. You know what? I've never done anything big. I have never actually walked into the store with the intent of stealing something. You know, when I was working at Tony's No Frills back in high school, well, I was the guy that brought the carts in from the parking lot. And then eventually I got promoted. I think I made $5.50 an hour at this point to being a stocker. And every once in a while I get to stock all the shelves overnight. The overnight shift at a grocery store, it's a completely different beast. And by that, I mean, you got these young guys that are making sandwiches and, you know, opening packs of ham and using the mustard and whatever. So my thing was chocolate milk. I would go into the back and just hammer one of those 500 milliliters of chocolate milk as fast as I can. A lot of the time, you would just put the empty container into the damaged goods thing, and then they would just write it off. Man, now I feel all of a sudden like I'm a criminal. Got to get me one of those masks from Money Heist. But no, I just, when is the last time I stole something? I'm going to say a pack of vitamin C pills from the Walmart in Port Coquitlam. And now that I've said it out loud, I feel bad, and I should probably go back and take it. All right, if you could live anywhere, I'm going to give you two options here. Would you live in the penthouse, like a skyscraper overlooking the city, or would you, although you're out in the burbs, live in a mansion? Okay, so downtown penthouse, where everybody can see you, you're the top floor, 360 views, probably got a pool, whatever, or would you take the huge house out in the suburbs, where even though you have to drive, what, let's just say half an hour away, but you get the big expansive yard, you get the two levels of house, you get all that kind of stuff. Okay, so I would say, I think this is a fair thing for most of us to say, if I'm young and I'm out to party and have a good time, I'm all about the penthouse. But if I've, you know, if I've got kids or I've got a family in some way, shape, or form, I'm definitely, unequivocally going to the burbs. I mean, with the mansion, you've got way more space, indoor and outdoor. You still got to deal with the parking when you're downtown. You still got to deal with the elevators. You got to deal with the traffic. I would say wholeheartedly, up until probably about 35, I would say anything downtown, like the high rise, the penthouse, the skyscraper. But once you get old enough, you have to move to the burbs. I mean, in my 20s, I lived at Smythe and Burrard, a block up from Robson, and eventually moved up to 12th and Canby, and then moved out to Burnaby. And now I live in Pitt Meadows. Like, I have progressively taken the steps. And yes, I lived in Port Moody. And then I went to Port Coquitlam. So I guess the next stop is like, what, Chilliwack? You know what? To be honest with you, in all the time that I've lived in the Tri-Cities, I have never gone past Maple Ridge. At least I don't remember going past Maple Ridge. I don't even know what is on the other side of the highway there. The furthest I think I've gone in that direction, is Maple Ridge. You know, it's so funny because you live in your neighborhoods and you think you've got it all figured out. You think you know where you're going. But man, once I get, for example, if I'm on Highway 1, anything after Abbotsford, forget about it. I don't even know if I could tell you the order of the cities. Would it be Hope? Or is it Chilliwack? I don't know, man. So anyways, one of these days, I'm going to have to just figure it out. You know what's ironic is I can tell you going south towards the state of Oregon, all of the major cities and all of the I-5 stops, because I did it so many years in minor league baseball that I know I-5. I know when you cut off so that you can go in towards Spokane. I have done the gauntlet down to Boise, Idaho. Dude, let me one day on this fine show tell you about my exploits to Boise, Idaho. I'll just give you 30 seconds because I know we got to get onto the next topic here. Yeah, like we're up against the clock here. Halfway to Boise, bus breaks. And we have to wait for another bus to come from Vancouver. So it was 6 hours before the bus broke down. We had to wait on the side of the road 6 more hours. And then we had to go another 5.5 hours just to get to Boise. And there was a game that night. And on that bus was a pitcher by the name of Julio Ramos. I remember this like the back of my hand. It was 2009, I want to say, maybe 2010. I think 2009. So anyways, he was 0-5, pitched really well, but just a hard luck loser. And who was pitching that night? It was Julio Ramos. So you can just imagine a guy that's 0-5. It's been like, what, 18 hours on the bus, and now he's got to basically suit up in 95-degree heat and pitch. Well, guess what? The Canadians, after I think they gave up the first two runs of the game, went on to win that game. If memory serves me correct, it was a blowout. It was like 15-5, 16-5, something like that. He got his first win of the season in the most unlikely of circumstances, and then doubled down on this. He never lost again, finished the season 6-5, and was named the pitcher of the year. It was one of the greatest turnaround stories that I've ever come across. There we go. Okay, now I have to get on to the next topic. Question number 4. The state of the U.S. government. All right, now I'm not very versed on this, but I will say that when I look down south right now and I see Joe Biden, Ron DeSantis, Kevin McCarthy, and then heaven forbid Donald Trump, and I will say openly, I don't know if I can do another 4 years of Donald Trump. And I'm not even American. But I was so worn out by his first term as a president, maybe first and only, maybe not, but just the relentless news clips, the relentless Donald Trump in your face for everything. I don't know if I could do that again. But what makes me a little bit nervous is when I do look at Joe Biden, when Joe is locked in and he's actually talking to you and he's coherent, he still looks like a guy that's got his finger on the pulse of what's going on in the States. Now, you can beg to differ based on, you know, certain politics within the Democrats and the Republican Party. But just if I was to pull the lens back as a guy on the outside looking in, which I am, I just think, gosh, you got one guy that you wonder if he'll make it to the end of his next term. And the other guy is just crazy. I keep waiting for somebody from the Democratic Party. Maybe it's Kamala Harris, who eventually starts to have a bigger voice. Vice presidents never really do have big voices, do they? They're always kind of in the background, even Mike Pence until, you know, the very end when he had to pipe up finally. I'm worried. Like, I will be completely honest with you because I think Donald Trump is going to get that Republican nomination, even with all the chaos that's going around him in court and the Stormy Daniels stuff and the January 6th stuff. I still think he's going to be the Republican nominee, and I still think he's going to potentially win the election. Like, the last time that Donald Trump got in was because everybody just assumed it was Hillary, but they didn't realize the groundswell of the southern states and the big three when it comes to the automotive industry. So that was really, like, when he won Florida, that was when all of a sudden eyebrows raised, and you know how the story goes. But I just think, man, as much as we've gotten the, what, three-year reprieve from Donald Trump, 2024 is going to be tense. The mud's going to be slinging. And if Donald Trump wins the presidency in 2024, you can bet your ass he's going to remember every name. He's taken them all down, and he is coming in with a hammer. And we're not just talking China and Russia. He is going to remember everybody that did him dirty over the past 3 to 4 years, and he is going to come in, no pun intended, guns blazing. Okay, question number 5. Let's bring it to this side of the border. Which Canadian politician do I relate to the most? Now, on this podcast, I'm not going to endorse any politician. I will say, at the beginning of Justin Trudeau's term, I was a fan. I thought he was young, vibrant, spoke well, looked authentic, and again, the lineage to his dad. There was just a lot of things to like, and I had been pretty fed up with Stephen Harper at that point, so Justin Trudeau was a relief at the time. But boy, you fast forward, what is it, 8, 9 years now? And just the way that he has handled the last couple of years publicly, him and Chrystia Freeland, the way that they just kind of tag up against the media, I've lost a lot of confidence in Justin Trudeau. And I don't know if Justin, he's the same guy that I voted for when this all started for him on the biggest stage of them all. That said, I think Pierre Poilievre is a really interesting guy because I do find him, I was having this conversation with a friend the other day, I find him to be a little bit, how would I say this? He comes across a little snooty, like a little bit of a know-it-all. But you listen to some of his politics, and I know that he's never been a guy that has pushed through a bunch of bills. He doesn't have the track record that some of the other politicians in Canada have. But the way that he talks and the way that he challenges Justin Trudeau and the way that he communicates is appealing to me. Like, again, I'm not endorsing one person. Jagmeet just has never won me over. And I think Jagmeet has just focused too much on aligning himself because they, of course, need a partnership to get some of their agenda pushed through, some of their NDP wants. And then the TikTok thing, I just can't get past. I've never connected with Jagmeet Singh on that front. So you go back to Pierre Poilievre, and Poilievre looks organized, connected. He communicates well. And if the worst thing about him, aside from some of the things on his agenda, which again, I'm not going to get into too much, but I'm just talking about which one that I, quote, relate to the most. If the worst thing that he comes across is kind of that guy you want to slap in the face, but he's hungry and he wants to become the leader of this country, I don't know. It's going to be an interesting year for a vote because when that happens, if Justin Trudeau doesn't do a real quick 180 on some of the things that he's done, it's going to be really tough for me to relate to him and in turn vote for him. All right, question number six. What is your most prized sports collectible? We've all got at least one or two things in our house that we've kind of tucked away, whether it's a foul ball that you caught at a baseball game or a stick that's been signed by a hockey player or, you know, a golf club that was used by your dad. There's always something there that you can relate to, and it becomes your most prized. I'm not talking about most valuable. I'm talking about my most prized. A lot of people that have listened to Rob Fee Nation Radio or even earlier incarnations of Sports Bar Radio will know that I've got a pretty decent jersey collection. I've got a pretty decent shoe collection. But I would say, without question, those four championship rings, I'm staring at them right now, the four championship rings that I was lucky enough to receive from the Vancouver Canadiens in the years that they won Northwest League championships back when they were short season A baseball, still probably, not even probably, they are the most near and dear to me. The 2011 one was the first championship that we had ever won. And that one will always, it's not the biggest one, but it will always be nearest and dearest to my heart for two reasons. One, every year leading up to 2011, a different team in the Northwest League would win a championship, and I'd always have to go to their ballpark and see their broadcaster and their staff with these big gaudy rings, and I always just thought, man, I would just love to win one. In my first year, 2001, nothing doing. 2007, nothing. 8, 9, 10, nothing, nothing, nothing. And then all of a sudden, the Vancouver Canadiens decided that they were going to go back into the pool and end their working relationship with the Oakland A's. And lo and behold, they bring in the Toronto Blue Jays. So now you've got Noah Syndergaard, Justin Nicolino, Aaron Sanchez, Kevin Pillar. Kevin Pillar just played in the playoffs, by the way. John Birdie, Shane Opitz, this incredible team, Nick Balagod, and they found their way to a championship. How they got to the championship was awesome. They didn't find out till the 11th hour that they had just gotten in. Their first round matchup, the West Division Championship, actually at the time I think it was called the Northern Division Championship, they were supposed to get just boat raced by the Eugene Emeralds that had the best record in the entire league, and yet in this best of three series, won it 2-1. Aaron Sanchez, by the way, pitched in that clinching game, I think 5 innings. And then they go on to the championship where they took on Tri-City, another team that was very good. Tri-City had tremendous pitching, but the Canadians weren't going to be denied, and they go on to win the Northwest League Championship. John Schneider started the season as manager of the Vancouver Canadians. Rich Miller finished that season as Vancouver Canadians manager. But just when I got the ring, I remember a couple of guys, Jason Takaffin, Tom Archibald, we were just beside ourselves. We just thought it was the coolest thing ever. And I just remember looking at the ring. That ring with a C's logo on top had my name on one side, and it had the Toronto Blue Jays logo on the other side. And I think that's why it was so near and dear to me. It wasn't just a championship ring from a minor league baseball team. It was a championship ring from a minor league baseball team with a major league affiliate that was my favorite team on earth. So when it all came together, just being in the locker room, champagne flowing, everybody spraying it at everybody, and then a couple of months later going down to spring training to give out those rings was just, it was pretty damn cool. So yeah, definitely the most prized piece of my very humble sports collection. All right, question number seven. You still with me? I appreciate it if you are. What job in life did you love the most? And what job did you hate the most? So I know what you're thinking, and you're probably going to say, well, this is a no-brainer, Vancouver Canadiens. You can hear about how Nirin Thierry talks about them in every show that I've done. But I will be honest. I don't know if it's my favorite. When I was in my 20s and I was really hustling, I would go do public announcing for Simon Fraser University, for their basketball, for their volleyball, for their football. And I was just grinding. I was trying to, you know, get into this industry at Rogers Community Television. One of the things that I did late at night to pass the time to, you know, earn money so that I could keep my head above water was bartend. And I bartended at, you know, a number of different Vancouver nightclubs over my time doing that. And man, I loved that job. And I'm not going to put it in a specific building. I'm not going to say it was the Big Bamboo or Barcode or, you know, Starfish Room or Club Elite. I'm just going to say that that job, I think if you're in your 20s or a late teenager and you want to do one particular job, dude, you have to do that job. Like, you have to do that job. It is so much fun. And yeah, you can go down some different paths. There's no doubt about it. There were some paths that I did not travel down that could get a little dicey. But if you just loved interacting with people, the bartender is always the good guy as well, right? The bartender is the purveyor of happiness because he's got the elixir that everybody's willing to pay for. I'll tell you this one story, though. This is bartending at its finest. So we'd have a lot of Americans that would drive up because it was the weekend that we made our most money. So we'd have a lot of Americans from Seattle, Tacoma, and they'd come up because the dollar was great for them. They could be anybody that they wanted to be. All of a sudden, a guy named John became Lance, what have you. And one night, I was just in a bit of a foul mood. Rarely that I was in a foul mood, but, you know, something had happened. Maybe my busser was screwing up, whatever. So this dude comes up. He's like, yo, I'm in the military. I've only got $5 here, but can you hook me up? And so, you know, it's not my booze, and I got people behind him in line, and I was just like, whatever. So instead of giving him a single, I give him a double. So I give him the head nod, which is instead of saying, you know, $9.50, I'm like, we're good. And then he says to me, can you give me a little bit more? So I've already given him a free shot. Like, I just added a little bit and whatever. And now he's just trying to double down and act like we're dudes, like we're boys. So instead of me adding another shot, I grabbed the glass. This is how stupid I was back in the day. I grabbed the glass. I drink half of what's in his glass. And I put it back and I go, that's what $5 actually gets you. And there were a couple of people that were looking at me like, damn, you know what? He gave me the $5 and he took the drink and he didn't come back. But man, I was looking at that moment and just thinking to myself, I would never do that in today's day and age, never in a million years. But man, you'd be flipping bottles. You'd be having time, money coming, money going. I don't even think we had, no, we didn't have tap back then. As a matter of fact, I didn't even have Interact. It was all cash, or you had to do the old school credit card style. But man, I'll tell you what, I absolutely loved that job. It'd be 3:30 in the morning. We'd be at some Chinese restaurant down on Hastings Street. There'd be bartenders from all different locations comparing notes, laughing about stuff. And every weekend, every Thursday, Friday, Saturday, you just knew you were in for a good time. That was my favorite job. The one that I hate the most, I'm not going to get into that. I'll just simply say, as a young buck, I tried my hand at telemarketing, and it was not something I would do again. All right, question number 8. What is the most you would pay for a steak? It's random. I don't think we'll spend the full 3 minutes on this one. I'll tell you what, if it's a really good steak, and I got a couple of bucks in my pocket, I don't know, what, 60, 80, 80 bucks? I don't know, like, what do they charge for a good steak down at Gotham or Joe Forte, somewhere in downtown? It's got to be like, I mean, I'm sure you could get the Kobe beef and it could be like, you know, $30 an ounce. But I would say I would be willing to part with about $70. What do we say? 70, 75? If I knew that this was a home run steak, like the keg steaks are in about the $45 range now, which is crazy to me. I would go to Gotham. I would go to one of the big boys. Hopefully it's a big cut, like a 12 or a 14. I don't know. That's interesting. How much would you pay? Hit me up on Twitter at Rob Fay, R-O-B. F is in Frank AI, and let me know, how much would you pay for a big old steak? And if you're a vegetarian, you could just fast forward. Next question, rank the Vancouver-based sports teams based on fan experience. Ooh. Okay, full disclosure, I worked with the Vancouver Canadiens. I don't know if you knew that. And I worked there for 15 seasons. So I am going to actually put them off on the side for now because I just think there's far too much bias. I still think, and I know people are going to hate this, I still think that the Vancouver Canucks reign supreme. I think the Vancouver Canucks have a lot of fans that remember bleaker times, but I look at their video board presentation, their ribbon board presentation, everything that they do in between whistles, intermissions, all of it. I mean, it's world class. You can't take that for granted. Like, yeah, sure, when you go to BC Place, they got a big stadium and it looks a lot nicer than it did 15 years ago. But we're talking about Vancouver-based sports teams and their fan experience. Now, to bring in the Canadians at Nat Bailey Stadium, I think outside with a beer in your hand and baseball, now that it's a little bit quicker, 2.5, 2 hours 45, I think that's the perfect experience. I think being outside, fresh air, 33rd in Ontario, you can't beat that. But as far as like the grandiose and the production of it, nobody's touching the Canucks. Like nobody's touching the Canucks. Not even the Warriors, and they share the same building. Although I will say that I thought the Warriors took a really big step forward. For those who don't know, the Vancouver Warriors are our lacrosse team in Vancouver. And they're starting to get better crowds, but their fan experience is awesome. They did a wrestling night this year, a whole bunch of different things that they did, and I think the fans will be back. I think they think this might be the year that they turn the corner on that front. Vancouver Bandits out at the Langley Event Center do a tremendous job. And again, full disclosure, I do have an affiliation with the Bandits, but what they do with the youth basketball in this province is really underrated, and I don't think covered enough by the media. I know the media is really, thin right now. They don't have a chance to get to everywhere. But trust me, Vancouver Bandits should be a part of this conversation. They're that good. Last question. When did you start wishing that you were younger? I can answer this. I was 20 years old. Actually, I might have even been 21. And I went to this baseball tryout with a couple of scouts that were there, and nobody wanted to look at me because they were all looking at this young kid from North Vancouver by the name of Simon Pond. Now, Pond might not be a household name, but he did have a cup of coffee in the major leagues, played with the Toronto Blue Jays briefly, and I just remember being told to throw him BP. He was like 16, 17-year-old shortstop. A lot of teams were wondering if they were going to draft him, and nobody was looking at me. And I thought to myself, obviously some of that has to do with skill. A lot of it had to do with skill. But by the time you get to 21, if you're not a somebody, most major sports aren't looking at you. Now, the NFL will look at a 21-year-old if they're coming out of Georgia or Alabama or LSU. But in baseball, unless you're, at some of those same schools, finishing up your junior or senior year, you're too old. You're a little long in the tooth. That's the first time that I felt old. Not in that experience specifically with Simon, but realizing that my shot to get looked at by scouts and have those moments had passed me by. And you know what's funny is a majority of my friends are actually younger than me. And even coming up to my next birthday, which will be my 50th, I am the first in my friends group to hit that landmark. So that makes me feel old as well. Yeah, I got friends that are still celebrating their 44th, their 45th. And I'm well ahead. So yeah, I think there's a couple of things that feel up. But you know what? I will say this, and people will be like, oh, that's like a Hallmark card thing. I really believe how you hold yourself, how you conduct yourself, how you dress, and how much effort you put into yourself, even the job that you take on, can make you feel younger. They'll say that kids do. And I think periodically that's true, but kids also age you. So I think it's a net zero. I think it's a wash. But yeah, I think your clothing can actually make you feel younger. The way you cut your hair can make you feel younger. And just the way that you hold yourself. Stop looking at your birth certificate. Like, it's been a long time since, I've wanted to get drafted or, find my way to a professional sports organization as a player. So I don't worry about the physical side anymore. But the mental side is also a challenge. The other thing that I think makes me feel a little bit old, and I'll finish up this show on this one. I wanted to keep this to 30 minutes and we're pretty doggone close. The industry that I'm in, broadcasting, like as a guy that's 50, I don't know if people are going to look at me the same way that they would look at somebody who's 40 or 35 or, dare I say, coming out of school that they might be able to get for cheaper, or they think that there's going to be a longer shelf life. Yeah, 50's an interesting one. I don't know. When did you start wishing that you were younger? Hit me up on Twitter at Rob Fay, R-O-B, F as in Frank, A-I, and let me know what number was the first time that you looked at that number and said, oh boy, I wish I wasn't that. We'll finish up on something good. I want to thank my friends at Equity Guru for allowing me this platform to come and do another Sports Bar Radio with you today. Like, subscribe, and share. That's all I can ask from you. The podcast is free, so the only thing that I can ask of you is that maybe we can do some guerrilla-style marketing. Share the link to the podcast, and thank you for listening. My thanks to Chris Perry, to Galen, to Daria, and to everybody associated with Equity Guru. I am Rob Fate.
You're listening to Sports Bar Radio with Rob Fay, brought to you by Equity Guru. Equity Guru, investment information for millennials and madmen.